Random House Audio presents Shadow of Betrayal by Brett Battles, read for you by Scott Brick. In memory of William Relling Jr., friend, mentor, missed. Prologue. March 25th. The doors to the council room had been closed for hours. That wasn't unusual. Council meetings routinely went into the early hours of the morning. It was just that this was a special meeting with a single item on the agenda, one that was very important to James Hardwick. Hardwick had been the one to propose the item to his boss. It was a huge power play for both of them, but also the right thing to do. All the pieces were in place, and if the answer was to move forward, so much would be achieved in the service of the overall plan of their organization, a group known as the LP. While the council met, Hardwick waited in the hallway outside the meeting room, sitting on a wooden chair against the wall. He occupied his time by going over every detail of his proposal, playing out all the scenarios, imagining the possible outcomes for each stage, and working out solutions that would keep the overall focus of the proposal on what they needed to achieve. At 2:14 a.m., the doors to the meeting room finally swung open. Hardwick stood up, crossed his hands behind his back, and bowed his head slightly as the members of the council walked by silently. A few didn't seem to even notice he was there, but most at least gave him a nod or looked him in the eye as they passed. The 14th member to walk by was Chairman Vine.
"Sorry we took so long, James," Chairman Vine said, his voice wavering.
Hardwick had no idea how old he was, but he thought there was little chance the chairman was under 85. "No problem, Mr. Chairman. It's always better to take as much time as needed in matters like this." The chairman looked like he was about to say something, then stopped himself for a moment before speaking again.
"He said to give him a few minutes."
The him the chairman was referring to would be Hardwick's boss, Mr. Kidd. He was the only council member who had yet to leave the conference room. "Thank you, sir." The chairman smiled, then turned and followed the others down the hall. His footsteps echoed in the marble hallway, growing fainter and fainter until the corridor fell silent again. It was a full 5 minutes before Mr. Kidd called for James to come into the conference room. Without being asked, Hardwick closed the door behind him after he entered. His boss was sitting in a chair near the end of the large oval table that dominated the room. It was made of mahogany and stained to a dark reddish-brown. Inset into the top of the table in front of each of the 15 chairs was a computer screen. Only the one in front of Mr. Kidd was on, but Hardwick couldn't see what was on the screen. The room had no pictures on the walls, no windows. Here was a place where distraction was not tolerated, where focus on the issues at hand was all that mattered. The business of the council had been conducted that way for decades. In fact, it was in this very room where the master directive was fleshed out more than 50 years before, the plan members of the LP had been working on since that day. All the original members were dead now, but their vision remained, and it was for the fulfillment of this vision that Hardwick had developed his proposal. "Sit down," Mr. Kidd said. He was a robust 74, sharp, in shape, and full of an energy Hardwick himself also possessed. His face gave nothing away, though, as he watched the younger man take the seat next to him. "How did it go?" Hardwick asked. There was a pause, then Mr. Kidd began to smile. "Exactly like you predicted. Your proposal was clear and to the point. Most were able to see the merits immediately. For a few, it took a little bit longer." Several hours longer, Hardwick knew, but only said, "So I can get started?" "A question first. Do you know if Mr. Rose was able to confirm the event he's selected for his target?" "Yes," Hardwick said. "I'm told it's locked, and there is little chance it will be changed.
And the procurement? I had to be careful getting this information, of course, but it appears Mr. Rose has someone he's hired from the outside already on it. I understand they have already picked up.
He paused. Children from various locations. His target number is between 24 and 30.
Mr. Kidd frowned. Distasteful. But necessary, I guess.
So Mr. Rose seems to believe.
Well, James, you now have the full backing of the council, Mr. Kidd said.
So I can start immediately, Hardwick asked.
He could feel his excitement building, but he let none of it show.
Yes.
Thank you, he said to his boss. He started to stand.
I should go. I have plenty to do.
There is just one other thing, Mr. Kidd said.
Hardwick stopped next to the chair, worried that some condition had been added to his plan that would jeopardize its success.
What is it?
From now on, you can address me as chairman.
Hardwick stared at his boss for a moment.
Seriously?
Chairman Vine. Mr. Vine suggested it himself, and the others agreed.
Hardwick thrust out his hand.
Congratulations, sir. This is fantastic.
Is it? Chairman Kidd said. He didn't take Hardwick's hand.
If your proposal doesn't work out, I'm fairly certain I'll become the shortest-term chairman in the history of the LP.
He locked eyes with Hardwick.
I'd appreciate it if you could make sure that doesn't happen.
Hardwick grinned as he reached down with both hands and grabbed his boss's, shaking it with confidence.
I guarantee it.
Chapter 1 May 25th.
The meeting location had been chosen for its isolation, an abandoned Catholic church on the east side of a little-used road 50 kilometers northwest of Cork, Ireland, near the border between County Tipperary and County Cork. The structure that remained was all but invisible from the road. One of those places only a local would know about, then forget over time. As a bonus, no one lived within a kilometer and a half of the ruins, making it a natural choice for an exchange. In the 2 days Jonathan Quinn had been scouting the location, no more than a dozen cars a day had driven past, and not a single one had even slowed, let alone stopped. The roof of the church had long since disappeared, leaving only the gray, pitted stone walls of the chapel. Encouraged by the wet Irish climate, vegetation had grown up around the building, both surrounding it and filling the inside. It was as if a congregation of flora was waiting in the open-air sanctuary for a priest who had yet to arrive. Nearby, an untended cemetery provided the only reminder that people had once worshipped here. Quinn didn't know how long the compound had been abandoned, but the most recent grave marker he'd located had been for someone named Maureen Owens, year of death, 1889. So it wasn't hard to imagine that it had been at least a century since any parishioners had gathered between the chapel walls. Quinn did a last walkthrough just after noon, careful to step only on broken stones or patches of grass to avoid leaving any trace of his presence. He double-checked to make sure all the cameras and microphones were well hidden and working. When he was satisfied, he returned on foot to the van parked a half-kilometer away. The meeting was scheduled for 9 that evening. According to the agreed-upon terms, the informant was to arrive from the south, while the man from Quinn's client, an organization known as the Office, was to come in from the north. They were each instructed to park a quarter kilometer from the location and walk the rest of the way in. They were to meet inside the church, with each participant allowed to bring one associate. Once they had all arrived, the informant would give the Office's agent certain information in exchange for what Quinn assumed.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?